This is Joan Legal recording the oral history on Joyce Esser Anderson. Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning, Joan.
I'd like to start with your childhood. Can you tell me where and when you were born and a little bit about that birth?
Yes, I was born in western Wisconsin on a farm. The actual area was called Ridgeville. It was in 1936, and I was born at home to Myron and Della Kortbein. Della's aunt, D.L. Goldbeck, was the midwife, and there were three subsequent siblings. None of those were born at home. And I lived on the farm until I left to go to nursing school.
Was it common for births to occur at home with the midwife at that time?
At that time, it still was quite common for people to be born at home, although we had a hospital in the county seat, which was Sparta, Wisconsin. But in general, many people were born at home. And at that time, I remember reading that there were only about 8 nurses in the entire county. So there were not a lot of healthcare personnel in the institutional setting, I guess.
Can you tell me about your mother? Where was she born and what was her family like?
Yes, she was born also. She lived at Ridgeville and she was born on the farm. And she was an only child of Lewis and Agnes Kuthlow. And she lived about 4 miles from where the farm was that I grew up on. The actual name of the address was Wilton, Wisconsin, but it was still very, very close. She went to high school in Sparta, Wisconsin, even though Wilton would have been the area that she should have gone. She was a teacher, and she taught in rural schools, several rural schools. At the time then that she married my dad and then moved to the farm where they farmed together, she was no longer allowed to teach at that time because the society did not allow married women to teach. So she had a contract, but she married in May, and the board came and said, "I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to teach because you are married." And her mother before her was a teacher also in the rural schools, and then her father was a farmer. So they were all very interested in education, and I think I grew up in an environment where we were very involved in schools and school politics.
Okay. Can you tell me about your father? Who was he, and a little more about him? When was he born and where?
Yes, my father was born on the very same farm that I was born. He was a farmer, he was in dairying, and he was the oldest son of Anna and Gustav Kortbein. So he was expected to take over the farm, which he did. His dad was quite a bit older than his mother, so I think when he was probably in his early 20s, then he began to be in charge of the farming. He was very interested in baseball and also very involved in school politics, served on the school board, and things of that sort. But every Sunday as I was growing up, we would go to a baseball game. Usually he played baseball. He was a catcher.
Did you play baseball?
Yes, I played baseball and played softball, and I remember quite a few of the games that we played in the country school, like Auntie I Over, and I think there was one called Red Rover, but we would go from one school to another, and then we would compete with the other rural schools in the area. We would usually bike, and they were usually maybe 3 miles apart, or maybe four, something like that.
When you're talking about rural schools, I envision a one-room school. Is that what these schools were like?
Yes, the school was a one-room, but eventually had an addition built on it. And then that addition provided a little storage area, a separate little room that the teacher could use for little special projects, and of course bathrooms, because prior to that time, the bathrooms were outdoor. At that time, then we did have running water, but prior to that, in the rural school, we had a ceramic jug. And someone in the community each day had to provide fresh water for us to drink in that ceramic jug.
Mm-hmm. So what year was it when
I was born,
indoor plumbing in the rural schools?
I would think that this was probably about 19, maybe 47 or so. I know that penicillin was discovered in about 1945, so I think it was shortly thereafter that we had the indoor plumbing. And of course the same was true on the farm. We didn't have indoor plumbing immediately, and I do remember when that happened, it was a big deal.
Did you go to kindergarten? Was kindergarten included in the grades that the rural school had?
No, I went 8 years through eighth grade, but we did not have kindergarten. I started school when I was 5 years of age, and then went through eighth grade there. And we used a lot of the community resources, the library I remember particularly, because I loved to read, and we had pretty much read what the school held as far as library holdings, probably within the first two grades or so. So then we would take books home from the library. And since my mother was a former teacher, she would just check out a huge amount of books, and then we would read them at home. And also the teacher in the school would bring in books from the library. So that was really a great benefit to us and a great stimulation, I think, to us.
What other activities influenced your, what other activities at home influenced your education? What sort of things did your mother and father do with you?
Well, we boarded the teachers, and that was a great influence. Usually the teachers lived with us unless they were from the community. They would usually come and stay with us on Monday morning, and then they would leave Friday nights, they would go home. So we were familiar with them as persons as well as in the teacher role. And I think that was a tremendous advantage for us. And, you know, in the evenings when we were little, they would even hold us and read to us and play games and all of that, because, of course, they were away from their families so that they could teach and earn a living. So also, I think many times people were assigned as teachers to the schools with very little background for what they would need to know. For example, they didn't necessarily know how to run the furnaces, or various other things could happen. So usually my parents were involved in problem solving some of those things, like the furnace wouldn't start or whatever it might be.
Can you tell me about your family heritage?
Yes, my family is, all lines are German and pretty much Pomeranian. I think we have one family who comes from Bavaria, and the rest all come from northern Germany along the Baltic Sea. So when I was growing up, the adults many times did speak German, My mother had studied a little German, and my dad had just picked it up from living in the family. So the grandparents sometimes would discuss things in German, particularly that they didn't want the children to know what they were saying. And we belonged to a Lutheran church on the ridge, and there was a German service. Now, we usually did not attend the German service, but we would be coming to the English service as people were leaving the German.
What about your neighbors? How far apart were they, and how often did you see them, and what were there any lines of friendship based on ethnic heritage?
I think we knew our neighbors pretty well, partly because my dad had lived on that farm all of his life, and then his father and mother had lived there for many years as well. And basically the Kortbeins, who immigrated from Germany, lived pretty much within probably 6 or 8 miles of that. So yes, we knew all of the neighbors, most of whom were of German heritage, but not entirely. I remember there was one Norwegian family. And we lived where we could visually see the next door farm. We couldn't see it well, but we could see if they were doing their laundry or something like that, and they would have things hanging on the clothesline. I remember when that neighbor died following a blood clot after she had had a hysterectomy, we saw them hanging out the laundry, and we suspected that something had happened, basically. There was quite a bit of getting together of the neighbors. There were PTA, which was the parent teacher organization. We were very involved in that. And then there were the homemaker groups. And in addition to that, the church groups, which were Ladies' Aid, they were called at that time, I think. So there was a lot of interchange. We didn't do a lot of interchange with the, I think in the community, some of the people really enjoyed drinking on Friday nights and so on. Well, we didn't do that. But as we grew older, we would go to dances with the neighbors and so on.
Okay. Tell me about your siblings. What were their ages in relation to yours?
I was the oldest child, and then my sister, Carol, was 14 months younger. So we were always pretty close, but I was much more timid than she, and so basically, if there was a risk to be taken, then she would take it. I remember things like Mother always had us wear brown stockings, which we hated, and we had to wear them longer than other people. But as soon as we got down by the mailbox, she would take hers off, but I never had the courage to do that. My second sister was Judy, and she was 5 years younger. She was born in 1945. And then my brother Gene was 9 years younger, and he was born on August 17th, and that must have been... Wait a minute, Judy was born in 1942, and Jean was born in 1945. Since it was approximately the end of the war, he does have a birth certificate, but it was never registered. And that is, I think, because the workers for the government agencies were pretty much involved in the war effort, and they just didn't get some of those things done. So those were... there were four of us, and we did a lot of things together, but I think the living experiences were very different for the two of us who were oldest compared to the youngest two. We often stayed with either maternal or paternal grandparents for a while, but that was not so true then for the younger ones, and I'm not exactly sure why.
Do you know why you stayed with the grandparents, why you and your sister stayed?
Well, I think sometimes it was just to help out if there was something going on with the younger children, that mother was busy, then just the grandparents would help out. Sometimes it was just for fun, and we would stay with the cousins, stay for a few nights or something like that.
Mm-hmm. What about your family's health?
I think the family's health was actually pretty good. I do recall probably when I was approximately 7 or maybe 9, we were diagnosed with scarlet fever. And other people had been diagnosed with measles. Well, because my father was in dairying, then we couldn't live on the farm if he was going to sell milk. So then we went to my paternal grandparents' home. They lived in Norwalk. And then we were quarantined. And they put up a placard. And people brought us groceries to the porch. But we couldn't go outside or anything like that. And I can't remember the length of time. It was several weeks. And then, of course, my grandparents came up and lived with Dad. And Mother lived down with us while that was going on. I think as far as preventive health care, it was the start of immunizations. And we usually had immunizations in the group. I think my mother was more pro-immunization, you know, than my father. But as far as health, I don't think that there were major issues until I was approximately 16 or so. And then my sister Judy had polio at the time that there was an epidemic. And she had polio that affected one leg. But since I at that time was working, I was living with a family as kind of a domestic and a child care taker. That was alarming to me because I didn't know what was going on with her. She was at La Crosse Lutheran Hospital. But I do remember when she came home and she was extremely pale. so that was one health problem. But otherwise, I would say that the family was really didn't have a lot of health problems. I had an appendectomy when I was 13, and I now don't necessarily think that I had appendicitis, but I think I was kind of bored with school and looking for some excitement. I'm not sure what the real situation was, but that's the way it seems to me in retrospect.
I assume you were hospitalized for when you had the appendectomy.
Yes, and that was at Sparta, Wisconsin.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How far was that from your home?
It was 11 miles about, and we also lived 11 miles from Toma. We lived on the ridge, which I never realized that it was hilly because our farm was flat, but we were basically, we could look over the hills down into the valley, and during the war, Camp McCoy was in the valley. And then the soldiers would be on maneuvers and walk by our road. And we children would sit in the car, we had a Chevy, and we'd just peek over the window and watch them do their maneuvers.
Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit more about your school days and your childhood until about you were pre-adolescence. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about school, what you liked about it, and maybe what you didn't like about it during those years?
Well, I was very fond of school. I found it quite exciting, and I enjoyed doing the schoolwork. And my parents, and probably particularly my mother, really encourage us to be very involved and to understand our work. And we were expected to prepare our lessons so that we had command of it, not just to do what the assignment was. So if there were issues that we couldn't resolve easily, then we just sat there and she would work with us until we figured out what it was, whatever it might be, math or so on. We were also expected to speak up in school, not mumble, and so on. So I remember we had a lot of stimulation from some of the programs which were coming from Madison, such as I think School of the Air. There was a music program with Professor Edgar Gordon. There was, I think, Schwalbach, I don't remember his first name, for art. And I remember we had an Audubon series. We colored birds. That was pretty stimulating. It allowed me later on when I was married to win an argument with my husband because I said the Cardinals stayed all summer, and he said, I mean all winter, and he said no they didn't, but I was right because of that Audubon series. And then we had science too, and we had the county supervisors, I think they were called. They would come to the schools several times a year, and they would work with us on phonics. And the county supervisor would stand in the front of the room and emphasize very strongly certain sounds, and we had to identify what that was. Now, the school teachers really didn't enjoy having the county supervisors come around. But for us students, it was kind of fun to see what we could do with whatever challenges they were giving us in phonics. We had a curriculum in which there were, we probably have 30 students in the school. So in my grade, there were only three of us. So sometimes we would do our lessons, or we were taught with another grade. For example, if you were in second grade, you might have first graders there. Or if you were in third grade, you might be working with the fourth graders. I remember we had a huge sandbox, and we did kind of science projects there and built villages and irrigation ditches and things of that sort. I also remember we had a furnace, and we would come in from playing in the snow, and we would put our wet mittens on the grate of the furnace, and I can still remember the smell of those awful wet mittens.
Did you have a favorite subject?
I guess I would have to say my favorite subject probably was reading. I enjoyed reading especially. But I didn't have anything that I didn't enjoy doing as far as the curriculum was concerned. But I guess reading was top of the line for me.
Okay. So I'd like to talk about your teenage years now, as okay. You became an adolescent.
Mm-hmm.
You stayed in the country school until you were 8, so you moved into high school then, after that.
Yeah, well, through grades 8, we were in the country school. And then for high school, there were a lot of politics going on, and we would have been assigned to Norwalk, which was a union-free school. And we wanted to go to Toma, and my maternal grandparents were living there, and so we paid tuition then to go to Toma School, and we rode the bus. We could ride the bus, and many times we also stayed in Toma, and we would stay with grandparents then. And they were very active, and they would drive us to various things, because my father usually could not get away from his farm work to do that. And sometimes mother would drive us, but usually it would be the maternal grandparents. And we were members of the band. I was pretty active in forensics and debate. I guess I would say I was an activist in school, and I participated in a lot of things. In those days, they preferred not to have the debaters actually be female. They wanted to have the male debaters. But My American history professor wanted me to prepare the research for the debate. And so he said, you know, you won't have to take American history, but I would like you to do the research. And the research was something about conscripting for military service. So I said I would agree to do that, but I wanted to at least see the exams because I wanted to at least have some command of the material. So I did that. But I did do some debating, usually first affirmative. And then we also came down to Madison for music and I played clarinet. And I remember, and I can't remember the name of the professor here, but he said, does your tone always wiggle like that? I was scared to death, you know, in performing. I wasn't really a musician, but we did do that. And of course, one of the things I remember about coming down here is we always ate at the Union, and they had fudge bottom pie, which I think they still do today. So we did a lot of that sort of thing. I took 1 year of home ec because that year they had decided that those people who knew that they wanted to be nurses no longer had to take Latin. Up until that time, they had to take Latin. So I took a year of home ec, and out of that, I learned to do demonstrations and had an opportunity to do demonstrations in other cities and then at the state fair, which was fun for me. My topic was spot removal. And then in high school, we had what we called a canteen. We would always go to the dances, and that's what we called the canteen.
You mentioned that you knew you were going to be a nurse.
I did.
When you were in high school. When did you decide that that is what you wanted for a profession?
Well, I think that I decided that probably while I was in grade school. Exactly when or why, I'm not sure. One of my aunts had bowel cancer and died. And I think that that was one of the things that definitely influenced me. I knew that I wanted to be a nurse, but I didn't necessarily think that I would be brave enough because I didn't particularly like the sight of blood and so on. And I guess maybe I thought that I didn't want to be a teacher. I wanted to do something different. And then we did, with my mother, explore a lot of schools. She really strongly believed in researching things. So we visited most of the schools in Wisconsin of nursing, and also I think we went to Rochester and so on. And then I was deciding between St. Francis at La Crosse and Luther in Eau Claire. And at St. Francis, you had to be in bed at 10 and you had to have the lights out. Well, I hadn't been in bed at 10 for many years, and I knew I wouldn't be able to do that. And so I went to Luther, and they were much, much more liberal in terms of some of those aspects of your life.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell me about your high school years?
I think it was a really fun time in a way. I think one of the things that amazed me when I was a freshman at high school is how many students were not very serious about high school. And I was always very serious. I mean, I had been taught to get command of what I was learning, and I couldn't believe the number of students who didn't discuss in the classes and didn't seem to really be involved with what was going on there. I had some teachers, I think, that were really very influential there, and you know, very, very helpful. I was involved with the what was called the Hammett. It was the annual. It was Thomas spelled backwards, and did some of the work in editing the Hammett. So it was a time of stimulation, and I was a pretty serious student and sometimes maybe too involved in the serious end of things and less so in the fun end. But I enjoyed high school.
Did you find other students who had a similar motivation and similar seriousness?
Yes,
as you?
I did.
Did you find friends that
Like
you?
Right. It was interesting because it was sort of divided between people coming in on the bus from the rural areas and then the people who were from the Toma city. And at first I thought it would really be kind of hard to bridge that gap, but it worked out pretty well. And I found that the social aspects were fun too and were accepting. So
were there distinct differences between those students from Toma and those who came on the bus? And which group, where did you feel comfortable?
Well, I think that in the city schools, some of the preparation was a little bit more rigorous than the country schools had been. But I think for me, because my mother was a teacher and we had the teachers around all the time, I had the advantage of that stimulation, so that was not a big disadvantage for me. But it did seem to be for some others who weren't necessarily quite up to the same level. Maybe things like algebra command was more difficult coming in from the rural schools where you didn't have as much of that.
What were your beliefs as a teenager?
Well, I believed in God. I was fearful of quite a few things, I remember. And I used to look up at the sky and be concerned about things ending and so on. I believed that there were certain rules that you should follow, and I didn't believe in things like drinking and getting drunk and that sort of thing. I thought social relationships were important, but I also could enjoy solitude and could entertain myself if I, if there weren't friends around. My sisters and I played a lot of imaginary games, and I know one game we used to play was we'd be doing the dishes, and we would pretend that we were either a stealer or a non-stealer, and then the other people would have to guess which we were being. We'd tell our stories. And, of course, it depended on your, being honest and staying with whatever you had started out with. But we did a lot of imaginative things, as I recall.
Did you have any special teenage friends that carried into friendships that carried into adulthood?
We did have quite a few friends, and we had them from several sources. One was on the bus. We had approximately an hour ride both ways, so that was a time when you bonded with a number of people. And then we also had some friends who lived in other rural areas and came into Toma High School that we had known just through our families, I guess, and we stayed friends with many of those for a while. Then there were the people from church, and they went to Toma too, so there were friends there that I've stayed in touch with even till today. And then from the new friends at the high school, there were people like that as well. And I do go back occasionally to the reunions, and the group of people that I'm really close with certainly is getting smaller, but at any rate, there are a few people that I've had enduring relationships with.
Can you tell me more about the nursing school that you chose, what kind it was, and some of the reasons? I know why you decided not to go to St. Francis, but why did you decide to go to, is it Luther in Eau Claire?
It was Luther in Eau Claire. It was a three-year program. And I think one of the underlying factors for me, I was really concerned that my family wouldn't have enough money to pay for going to the university. I would have liked to have gone there, but I didn't think that they could afford it. They probably could have. I mean, that was probably more my view than reality. But at any rate, Luther was in the year that I started beginning the 1 year of attending Eau Claire State University, and then we would get credit for that year as well as credit for the 3 years of nursing. So it was 1 year at the college, and then the last 2 years was at the school, Luther School. Luther was about 21 blocks from the college, and we would walk N block, 50 nurses, nursing students, to the college, and people would say, "Here come the nurses." We took the regular college courses there, and it was very important that they be labeled not just for nurses, because if they were labeled for nurses, then we wouldn't get credit if we wanted to go on to school. And I already knew that I wanted to go on to school. So when I was ready to leave Luther, Leonard Haas was the chancellor, and I met with him, and we then met with the people from the university here in terms of being sure that those college credits would transfer. But when I got down here and I went up to Bascom Hall, so I'm going to get my Luther 1 year credits. I walk up to Bascom and they said, "Well, I'm sorry, there's no record of that. You're going to have to take those courses over, all these basic courses." Well, I was just devastated because we had had the meeting and there had been the agreement. So I walked around Bascom for about an hour. I probably went down to the union. Maybe I got something to eat. And then I decided I'm going to take one more try and see if I can work this out. So I went back up to Bascom, and the person was there that had sat in on that meeting. And so I got all those credits. So that was a real advantage, and I don't know what made me decide to go back, but I did go back, and I was lucky that I did. So.
Now, just for the record, can you tell me what year you started at Luther?
Let's see.
Eau Claire?
Yes, in 1955.
Okay.
And then I graduated from there in 1957.
Okay.
Right.
And when did you start classes at UW-Madison?
Right. Well, the first semester I just took Spanish, and I took it by correspondence. So when I actually got in the classroom for my second Spanish course, I had never heard it spoken. And for the first week, I was just totally lost. But finally, then I began to be able to hear the spoken word and be able to use it a little bit better. And so then I took classes that second semester and then just completed, kept on taking classes, including summer classes. And I graduated in August of 59 from the university. And the interesting thing was the program here at UW in nursing was a 5.5 year program. But because I had gotten the credits for the year at Luther College, or at Eau Claire State College, and then the Luther program, I actually graduated a semester ahead of the people who had started at the same time at Madison that I had started at Eau Claire. So it wasn't a completely rational system.
Mm-hmm. What did you do after you got your Bachelor of Science in Nursing from the UW-Madison?
Then I took a job teaching at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison. It was a hospital school of nursing. It was a three-year school. And I was hired to teach fundamentals. So that could have been where you and I met.
It was.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And at any rate, I think I taught there just the 2 years. And 1 year I had the fundamentals, and then I also had the clinical students. And at that time, the hospital had a relationship with the practical nursing program, so I had practical nursing students as well. And I remember being oriented on the unit, on the clinical unit, for a week. And of course, I was pretty green. And then it was all very friendly. And then after that, you know, nobody spoke to me hardly or anything. So the librarian one day noticed this, and she told me that when I came from the university, they had said something like, you know, she's coming from the university and she'll be setting everything up well for us here. It was not a good introduction. But of course, I didn't even know it, and I was just basically trying to keep one step ahead of the students, so it worked out pretty well. But I remember, I think we had 60 students in that fundamentals class, I also remember one day I was sick, and I said to my husband, would he take the my papers that I had to hand in to the students? And he took them, and Sister Suzanne answered the door. Well, my husband didn't smoke, but he always chewed on this old pipe. So he had this, and I wouldn't let him buy a new pipe, and he had this pipe that had a carved nude lady on it. I thought, oh my goodness, I'll be losing my job here. But that too passed.
So did you have any clinical experience before you took the teaching job at St. Mary's?
Yes, I did. I worked in women's medicine, which was an inpatient unit for women. In medicine, they would divide. At university hospitals, they divided the units into two medical units for men and two medical units for women. So for 1 year, I worked there as a staff nurse. And then while I was taking classes, I also floated. So I floated to every unit at university hospitals. And now, if I were ever to work again, or even for many years, if I were to work, I would never take a position like that. But then I was younger and faster, and I did kind of enjoy that. But we did a lot of floating to neurosurgery was a place where I had quite a bit of experience, because there was often a need for extra nurses there. And cardiac surgery was another unit that we floated to, but I floated basically everywhere.
Now, you had the experience of two different types of nursing education. One was hospital-based and the other was university-based. Can you tell me some of the differences and similarities between those two programs, you know, at the time that you were involved in those?
Well, I think that the actual amount of clinical experience, I think, was greater in the three-year programs than it was at the university. The amount of stimulation and critical thinking, I think, was more intense in the university setting. But the clinical experience tended to be it would be based on whatever the main themes were in the theory part, and you didn't have the repeated experience usually in the way that you might have it in the three-year program. I think the three-year program many times gave you an opportunity to do things like be in charge of the unit even when you were a student, when there was a need, which probably wasn't the healthiest thing, but I can remember that happening, and that happened to me at Luther. One New Year's Eve, I was working, and they put me in charge of the pediatric unit. Well, I'd had a PEDS affiliation at Milwaukee, but I didn't know much about PEDS. And there were only, I guess, three patients on the unit, and they did not expect admissions. Well, I had seven admissions. And I had one mother who brought in her son, and she thought he was having an asthma attack. So I kept calling the physician, and he would never call me back. Well, the child really wasn't having problems particularly, but if he had been having problems, I would have really been in trouble. But anyway, it turned out that this man, this physician, was an obstetrician and a pediatrician. And he was at a New Year's party, and he remembered that he was an obstetrician, but not that he was a pediatrician. So when the hospital would call, he'd call OB, and of course they didn't want him, but I wanted him. So finally, I got a chance to talk with him, and he said, you know, set up this croup tent. Well, of course, I had never set up a croup tent. So those were some experiences that I had at a three-year school, which probably were not totally rational experiences, but you gain certain lessons from that too.
Can you tell me what a croup tent is?
Well, basically, it was kind of an enclosure which fit over usually a crib, but I guess you could put it on a bed as well. And it allowed you to send in oxygen and steam, and it helped to control people who had infections who might be having, croupy breathing or just basically an asthma attack or something like that. So that's what it was. It wasn't terribly complex, but it's a little threatening when you don't know what it really is.
You mentioned a husband when you were talking about taking your first job at St. Mary's. Can you tell me how you met your husband?
Yes, I met my husband at a slow pitch softball game, and I came to that game with another man, and Ray was there, and he was playing slow pitch, and he asked me to hold his billfold. So that's how I met him. While he was playing, he asked me to do that. So. Right, and then we married, and I was still a student at that time.
Mm-hmm. So where was this slow pitch game, and what year was that?
I think that was probably in 1959, I'm not sure. And it was maybe Breeze Stevens Field here somewhere. It was here in the city. It was in the city, yeah. I don't remember the specifics of it too well, mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about your courtship? How long did...
Well, right. We probably dated for about a year, and then we married. We were married at the Little Brown Church in the Vale in Nashua, Iowa. That was quite an experience. I remember going to the courthouse to get our license, and they had a system where they would like motion to the person who was out mowing the lawn, and then he would come in and be your witness. And of course, then you had to pay him a little bit of something for it. But and we had my sister and her husband, and then another good friend of Ray and his wife, and three school age kids went with us to get married. So it was quite an experience.
Why did you decide to get married there?
Well, we did because My husband had been Catholic, and he had left the church for quite a few years prior to that, but his mother had a hard time accepting that, and so we decided to elope. So that was the reason for that. And so when we came back, she had all of his books sitting out on the lawn. It was a hard decision for her to make, but she had, you know, not accepted what had happened quite some time earlier. It really had nothing to do with me.
Mm-hmm. So did she ever accept your marriage?
I think she did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think she did, right? Once she had time to adjust to it and realize that I wasn't a wild-eyed radical.
So tell me about your husband. Where was he born? And
he was born in Madison. I think he was born at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison, and that's the children were then born at Meritor. But he and his families live, his siblings all lived here in Madison. And he basically lived here his entire life, except for a short time when he lived in Florida. And he was a professor in mechanical engineering. He taught technical writing. And I can remember, must have been the Vietnam War, and the engineering students, if they had a poor grade in technical writing, would come over to the house and they would think that that wasn't fair, because they were engineering students and it wasn't really an engineering course when you're taking a writing course. It's kind of a frill, you know. So, and of course a lot of people were concerned about the draft and all of that. So that was a very turbulent time. He was a writer, and he liked to write novels. He didn't have any of his novels published, but he usually did not work in the summer because he would write, and so then I would try and suggest jobs, but he never really found a summer job that could compete with writing, I guess.
Now, his name was
Raymond Esser.
Okay.
Yes, right.
And you mentioned children. Can you tell me about your children?
Yes, we have five daughters. Lucy is the oldest, and she lives in Verona, and she has six children, and they're all pretty much athletes. And she has one with spina bifida, and he has just qualified for the Paralympics tryouts. He has to go to New York to try out. So I think we're going to go do that in June. And then Julie is, she's a teacher in, she teaches in Kimberly, lives in Appleton. And she has a son, Jeremy, and he's a gifted athlete. He is, soccer and tennis are his games, but I think he's probably going to stay with soccer. But he's in eighth grade, and his team has just for the first time won the state tournament. So they're going to be going to Sioux Falls at the same time we're going to New York. And his dad is a former Cameroonian soccer player. And Nancy lives in Fitchburg, and she and her husband have two children, Jossie and Dietrich. And Dietrich has just finished his baseball career at Verona High School. He's about to graduate. And Jossie's involved in athletics as well. And then Jenny has a son who's graduating, and his area was football. Right now, Jenny is a nursing student at Edgewood, and she has one semester left. And then Debbie lives in Random Lake, and she has a daughter, and she works in Milwaukee. So they're all pretty good friends, the five girls now, and they're, growing up they were very different, but now they're, I think, the main confidants for one another, and maybe the main irritants at some time too, but they really seem to get along pretty well.
Is there anything that else that you can tell me about your family, the with the children growing up and you working?
I did work all of the while that they were growing up, and I usually worked PMs, and then my husband Ray would be home in time from his university duties so that he could be the babysitter. So that worked out really pretty well for us. And then his mother was always very fond of having the children too. So when they were growing up, we did have one woman who, she didn't live with us, but she would babysit, and she had 9 children of her own. So that if we were going to take a long trip, then she would manage the children. I always felt real confident with her. We used to take a lot of trips with the girls, and my husband liked history, especially Western history. We often went west, sometimes we went east, but we explored a lot of the states in the mainland. And then he and I went to Hawaii too, but we didn't take the children along on that. But we usually would take the type of trips where we would stay in a hotel and then we would explore a region. And I was involved with the Nurses Association, so he and the children would usually go along to those various settings, the annual conventions, and so on. They were all pretty, the girls were pretty involved in sports as well. So in the summers, they would be playing softball or soccer. Several of them played soccer. And now the grandchildren are sort of getting into lacrosse, seems to be the big game that people are playing. The children all went to Memorial, except Jenny graduated from West. And I think that happened because at that time Ray died, and it was for some reason just too difficult for her to be at Memorial, and she wanted to be at West, so she graduated from West.
Can you tell me more about your husband's death?
Well, he had brain cancer, and he was in class, and he had a small seizure. I mean, it was, you know, sort of a facial thing, and so he then had all the tests, you know, they checked to see what the problem was, and because he was sort of a fullback type of guy, I think they were thinking cardiac. But at any rate, then we decided that we were going to go down to Texas for an American Nurses Association meeting, and so we went to the doctor and asked if he could go. And they said yes. And down there, then he started to have seizures, and we had to come back up. But then at that time, he was diagnosed with brain cancer. And he lived about 9 months. And we had hospice as a family, and that was very, very helpful to us. And he said, I never knew I'd be such a blabbermouth. So,
what did he mean by that?
Well, he didn't think that he would, you know, like having someone come in and talk to him and so on. Mm-hmm. But I guess he found he did. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, how old were you and how old were the children when that happened? Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. I was in my 40s, and the children were, they ranged from 9 to... let's see, must be about 17 is what they were. Mm-hmm. So they were all still at home at the time. Mm-hmm.
So tell me how you managed that, Joyce.
Well, I think hospice was very helpful. And I continued to work, but we had people come in and they would stay with the children for at least part of the time while I was working. And I probably didn't work an 8-hour day, but at least I did do that. And then I think that was one of the main things. The family was also really supportive. And he didn't have a lot of pain, but except the psychological pain of, you know, all the changes and so on. So it wasn't until the very end where he was really total care, and then he was hospitalized for that. But hospice helped even with things like, you know, talking to the schools, helping the children to get clothes that they needed for special things because I didn't have time to do it, and so on. So all of that was extremely helpful. My church was very involved.
Well, that sounds like that was a very hard period of your life.
It was.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right, are you ready?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Joyce, can you tell me more about what your life was like after your husband died?
Yes, I was quite busy at the time because I did have the 5 children. Plus, I administered the estate myself. I did have the help of an attorney, and that did help me considerably. But nevertheless, I decided that I was going to do the probate myself. And I also tried at that time to keep life as normal as possible for the children. So we did travel a little bit and worked with trying to spend quite a bit of time with them, but also to get out and do some things myself. I continued to work, and I then took the children to, I remember we took a trip to Chicago and went down on the waterfront, and that was fun for us in a different environment, kind of exploring new things, but also getting to talk about what our feelings were. And still, hospice was helping us during this particular time because of issues helping us to grieve and so on. At that time then, I began to also be involved with hospice as a volunteer. And I eventually served on the board for hospice and then became very involved as the president of the board and then the state-level board. And for 8 years then, we worked on trying to get licensure for hospices, and we finally did achieve it. And just before we had the licensure in the bill, and they decided they were going to put it in the budget bill, and then 2 people who had worked with us all along decided that no, we shouldn't have licensure for hospices because it would take away that kind of creative, organic aspect that hospices had when you would just carry a casserole to the home of a family who was grieving or so on. So they provided input to every legislator, and this was before faxes, saying just exclude all those hospices except the ones that are Medicare certified. Well, that essentially killed our bill after 8 years. But we, they had gone to Russ Feingold, and he had thought that that was the official position of hospice, so he took our bill out. Well, then we had to go to all the local communities and all the legislators, and we went to the National Hospice Organization, and we had to deliver the information that was incorrect about these proponents of getting that out of the bill to every legislator, but we were able to get Governor Tommy Thompson to veto that section, so that then saved the licensure for hospices. So that was the story of one victory. With the children...
Could you please tell me what year that happened? Or
approximate time? That must have happened in the late 80s. I can't tell you the exact year. I don't think I could. I could guesstimate, but I probably would be wrong. But so that was really an exciting time. But prior to that, then, we had pretty well driven all around the state. Betty Batson and I would go to the local communities and talk about the importance of licensure and so on. And nobody's very fond of licensure, but it was a provision that did end up helping the hospices to grow and begin to be more financially stable, as well as to be able to provide a greater range of services to more people. So those are some of the things that I was doing in the period of time after Ray died. And the children also had a lot of support of relatives, and I think they really did pretty well. But of course there were some really tough times, and we did have a lot of adjusting to do. Then I became involved in an organization which was called CARA. And CARA was just a social organization for widows and widowers. And at one of these, on Fridays we would go out usually to eat to sort of avoid that situation where the widower or widower sits in front of TV and eats popcorn instead of having a decent meal. And at one of those Friday night dining experiences, I met Eldon Anderson. He was the manager of the laboratory in the hospital in Stoughton. And someone at the meeting introduced us, and we began to date, and then we did marry. Now, this was rather difficult because his children had been out of the home for about 10 years. He had two children. My children were all in the home. And I really didn't see myself as the marrying kind, but we eventually did marry. But it was, I'm quite sure it was a harder adjustment for Eldon than it was for me, because five children as opposed to no children for 10 years is somewhat of a contrast. But we began to do traveling together, and we would take the children along. We visited Germany quite a few times, Sweden, and also Denmark. And then we also took trips on the continent and out west and so on. So it worked out very well. And in time, the children and Eldon began to appreciate each other's finer points.
What was the year of your second marriage?
That was in 1982.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joyce. We will continue this later.
Thank you.